from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
I don't think we're going to interrupt that. I think that, it's important for him to feel what 30-32 starts, feel like. Obviously not 6-7 innings, but, we'll make those necessary adjustments. But there's something to be said to that. There's something to be said to taking the ball every 5 or 6 days and feeling it, even if you're not going deep in games, even if you're going 2-3 innings. That's important.
That is Pedro Grifol talking about the innings plan for Garrett Crochet. Good morning, everyone. It is Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run on the Score. Always a great opportunity to talk baseball in our unique two-team town on a Sunday morning, and a thrill every time I get a chance to bring in Steve Stone, the Score's baseball expert, who joins us right now on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Hello, Mr. Stone. How are you?
Good, Spiegs. How are you?
I'm good. Happy birthday. Is that true?
Well, thank you. Yeah, it really is. I guess as long as I continue having them, all will be well. So, although I'd like to have had a few less, I continue to really enjoy my birthday.
Well, good. And you're working. You're working,
yes,
not only with us, but later today. That's, why not, I suppose, after a certain point.
Well, I'm at the park right now looking in. It looks like the end of the world. There's lightning and thunder everywhere, but, a lot like life. Sometimes it gets off to a rough start, but it's going to be a beautiful day today. This is all going to clear out. It's going to be sunny. It's going
to
be great.
Oh, man, your mouth to God's ears. Steve, we played Paul Skeens and Garrett Crochet. Wasn't that cool? I love that.
And it's great because they're two young stars in this game. They both throw very hard, obviously, but one lefty, one a righty. One's been around a bit. The other is a rookie, but they're both outstanding pitchers. I mean, I would have loved and would love to see that they would start head-to-head, but that's probably not going to happen. I don't know, but for Paul Skeens, it's really an honor to start that game. I was able to start one. I knew that there wasn't going to be any more because my arm wasn't feeling all that great at that point. But just that one time is absolutely a thrill. I hope his folks can go out and see that. Same thing with Garrett's family. They can go out and see that game because I had my parents at the game in 1980, and it was a thrill for them. It was a thrill for me.
Wow, that's really cool that your folks got there. And, the Baseball All-Star Game, which Stoney starred in and was the MVP after three perfect innings, right?
Yes, I didn't win the MVP because Griffey decided he was going to hit a home run off Tommy John, and they wound up winning the game.
My bad.
Yet, I heard it hadn't been done for 14 years or something like that, three perfect innings, and then it's never been done since and won't be done again because nobody in their right mind is going to let their starting pitcher go three innings to start the game of the All-Star game.
Yeah.
So they'll go an inning, and that'll be great, though.
Yeah, 250 innings for Steve Stone that year, so perhaps he knew that the arm was not going to to allow much more of it. Let me ask you, though, do you remember a moment like Skeens and Crochet just had where a great contemporary of yours was complimentary of you, and it mattered? Because, that can matter a great deal. I remember being a young talk show host and somebody saying, you're good at this, and you got a shot to be really good at this. It was like, wow, okay. And sometimes those moments matter. So do you remember a great contemporary of yours being complimentary of you, and it meant something to you?
Well, I remember a guy, and you might not recognize the name because at the time he was a bench player for the Orioles and later went on to become a hitting coach. His name was Terry Crowley.
Hmm.
And after one particular antagonizing moment with Earl Weaver, I was in the shower and I hear somebody in spikes come in. It's Terry Crowley. He says, grab a towel and come sit over here. Because I think I'd started 3 or 4 games for the Orioles at that point. I was new to the team. And he said, look, let me tell you a little something. He says, I know it's not going as well as you'd like right now, but understand something. As long as you're wearing that uniform, he said, we are a team of professional winners. And you wouldn't be a winner. You wouldn't be here if you weren't a winner. He said, our super scout, Jimmy Russo, watches everybody really carefully before they're brought to this team. And if you keep us close, you will win more games here in Baltimore than you ever dreamt you could win before. He said, we don't score early, and we don't score often. And he said, but if you hold us close, you're going to win. He said, this is a team that will sit around and wait for that other team to make a mistake. And when they do, we're going to bury them with it. And that's exactly what happened. We won 202 games in 2 years. That was a team of professional winners. They had their own way of welcoming various players to that particular team. And it was that conversation, another one I had with Mark Belanger after we gave up 47 runs in three games to Milwaukee. And I'm just shaking my head. I didn't pitch in it. And he says, what's going on here? I said, what's going on? 47 runs in three games. He goes, you're worried about that? I said, didn't look too good. He says, let me tell you something. We come back twice. Come back the end of June. We come back beginning of September. He said, starting June 1st, nobody hits our pitching. He said, nobody.
Ha.
He said, when we come back here, we're going to kill them because we're going to hit their pitching and they're not going to hit ours. And as long as you're wearing that Baltimore uniform, that's the way it's going to be. So you had guys on that team that told the newcomers to the team exactly what they were getting into, what they expected of you, what they wanted you to do. And that's how a team gets to be a championship caliber baseball team, is getting a few guys who understand that you're going to be better than another team on a daily and nightly basis.
Man.
The object, when you don't have a winning tradition, and the Sox don't have one of those specifically, but the object of that is to grow that attitude. You make a team that the whole is better than the sum of its parts. We didn't have the best players in the American League. We just happened to win it.
So Stoney, I feel like from what I've heard, Garrett Crochet has some of those personal characteristics that can make a great pitcher a real ace, and can make an ace somebody like that, who, like you're describing, who can helm a rotation. You know, like Drew Thorpe is good and I like him. Noah Schultz is probably coming. You've got Cannon, you've got Moore, Eater, you know, getting a little taste of it. Jake Eater, you know, getting a taste of it. But does Garrett Crochet seem to have those characteristics you're describing in terms of a pitcher? And if so, how valuable is that when you're deciding whether to keep or trade?
Well, first of all, you want five guys like Garrett Crochet, but you can't get them because he's unique. He's a guy that nobody hits. I don't think they see the ball until it's right up on him. By that point, it's too late. But he's been a wonderful member of this ball club, and he's got the right attitude. He is a bulldog on the mound. He's a guy that gives you everything he's got each and every time out. Nothing seems to affect him very much. And, yeah, he's got those characteristics. Now you have to grow a few more. And by doing that, you just have to bring in guys that understand how to play baseball. It's not enough just to know how to hit. It's not enough just to know how to run. It's not enough to know how to occasionally hit the ball out of the ballpark. You have to have guys that understand how to play the game of baseball and then how to play winning baseball. And sometimes they're not one and the same. But if you prepare your team to win the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning on a daily basis, you're probably going to win a good portion of your games. And it's these philosophies that I think the new administration here, and I really like what Chris Getz has done with the front office. I like the guys he's brought in. There's a changeover in personnel, and it seems to me these guys have a pretty good idea about what's going on. I mean, just the signing of Eric Fetty was a wonderful sign, and we'll see what happens. I think he's pretty desirable, and as we know, the trade deadline is coming up. Today is the draft. There's a chance to get a whole lot better. The Sox have five. They have the fifth pick, and so there's a lot of guys working a lot of long hours to try to put this thing together, and I think despite the looks of this year, because this was basically an inherited team. And, you know, I know that Pedro is not one of those guys that the fandom gets warm and fuzzy with, but he hasn't had much of a team for 2 years. Mm. Hopefully he'll get a chance to do that with more talent. And then you'll be able to see the measure of the man and the measure of the manager. but I'm not sure it's fair to evaluate him on what he's been handed for a year and a year and a half plus, because there's just not a whole lot of talent here, major league-wise. I mean, they're wonderfully talented people, but I'm talking about comparatively in the major leagues.
We're going to talk to Aram Layton from Just Baseball at the top of the 11 o'clock hour. I want to ask him about some of the stuff from the Futures game. I haven't had a chance to see Noah Schultz in person yet, or even really an extended video. I'm excited about him. What do you think of him as a prospect, Stoney?
Well, I think anytime you get a guy who's 6'9", who throws like he does, you have to view it that he's a pretty good prospect. You know, you got to see him for a while. You don't know what's going to happen. Nobody can stage development. In other words, you take a look at a guy and you get a great scout and he tells you, this guy will develop in a year. This guy will develop in a year and a half. This guy will develop in 2 years. You don't really know. That's a non-exact science. But if you have great talent to work with, then the second thing you have to have, which I believe is the most important, and by the way, you cannot find in a computer, tell me the size of the guy's heart and the size of the guy's huevos. If you can tell me that, you got yourself somebody, and he can answer the question that this is the right guy, then you have yourself a guy. That's why scouts are important. I don't poo-poo computers because I think that there's a lot of great things that come out of them. But the realization is 90% of the things that everybody spits into their computer, all 30 teams in the major leagues, 90% is the same. You have to believe that the 10% you have that's proprietary, that it's much better than everybody else. Sometimes it doesn't work that way. But the true scout can tell you what's inside a guy. A computer can't.
Steve Stone with us here on 670 The Score. Stoney, Drew Thorpe was on Inside the Clubhouse yesterday with Bruce Levine and David Haw. He was asked how he's been successful.
I think just, you know, sticking to the game plans each week and, you know, working with the catchers, dialing it in with pitch shapes and stuff, and just, you know, continuing to mix around and keep hitters off balance.
So, four straight quality starts for that guy. I heard somebody talk about him as being tough and, like, brave. They said he's got cojones of steel. What do you think of Drew Thorpe, and what does pitcher toughness look like? You know what I mean? I'm trying to wrap my head around that idea of a pitcher being tough in that kind of way.
Okay, so let's take one example, and it's Eric Fetty. Eric Fetty goes out there, loads the bases in the first inning with nobody out. He's telling himself at that point, they're not going to get me. I'm going to get them. You always feel that you're better than whoever it is you're playing against. And I'm realistic. I mean, I didn't have all-world talent. And you face all of these guys on a daily basis. Some of them are going to the Hall of Fame. Some of these guys have more talent than you have. But you have to beat them on a given day. I think that's the philosophy that Drew Thorpe has. I do believe he goes out there with a unique pitch. That straight change is just absolutely outstanding. And he believes that nobody's going to hit it. And if they do, well, it was a mistake. And then I'll throw something else. I mean, he broke out the cutter last time, which looked pretty good. But his ability to stay around the plate with everything is probably his greatest attribute, that and a wonderful straight change. And if you have a good straight change, you're usually going to be in pretty good shape. Now, he knows he doesn't have the big fastball, but his fastball has perceived velocity, because when you're looking at the straight change quite a bit, all of a sudden you see a fastball up in your eyes that's 91, maybe 92 if the wind's behind him, then all of a sudden that fastball looks a whole lot faster. And I think that's what Drew has. Coming in and doing what he's done, it's really a remarkable thing. It shows you also a pretty good trade was made for Dylan Cease, because Thorpe was one of the guys coming back. There's a few others that are pretty good also.
Yeah, it's fun to watch him, and it's exciting to think about. I always have a soft spot for the dudes who are really changing speeds with a big repertoire and using what you just called the perceived velocity. It's like it just feels like it's, I mean, Kyle Hendricks was great the other night for the Cubs against the Cardinals. Now that he has reincorporated the curveball, and I don't know if it's as much about the shape of the curve as it is as much as it is that speed and that pace, it just throws off people's timings. It makes everything else work better, doesn't it, when you can mix it up like that?
If if you can throw a great straight change, you're going to probably find a place in the major leagues, assuming your other stuff is commensurate with what you have. But the great straight change is really difficult to hit. And he came in not afraid to throw it, not afraid to throw it a lot. I'm not sure he's afraid of much of anything on the mound. So we're slowly putting together a really good starting rotation. You have to shore up the bullpen. Everybody knows that as far as baseball is concerned, because without a good bullpen these days, you're going to finish up the track. You don't have pitchers going, you know, averaging seven innings plus. That doesn't work that way anymore. And your bullpen, especially the back end, has got to be as close to unhittable as you can get it, which is why having Liam Hendricks here in the years that the Sox had him, there was a sense of comfort when you got the lead late in the game, because here comes Liam running in from the bullpen, and you just know they're not going to hit him. And he also knows something else. He wasn't going to walk anybody to start an inning. That's death for a short reliever especially, and that happens a little bit too much.
So Luis Robert has 11 hits, an OPS of almost 800 here in the month of July. Bob Nightingale this morning writing in USA Today, Stoney, that the White Sox are, quote, cautiously optimistic that they can trade him, unquote. Do you think we're watching the last couple of weeks of Luis Robert on the White Sox?
I don't really know. I can't answer for Chris Getz. I do know that Luis is a guy who has tremendous value. And I think when your team is doing what the Sox have done last year and are doing this year, there shouldn't be any untouchables. Now, it would take a bundle to get a couple of these guys. Garrett Crochet, to me, is a guy you build around, not the guy you move. Luis Robert, if you move him, you're going to get a big haul in return. I don't think necessarily that's a bad thing. So they don't want to move Luis Robert. But if somebody comes to them with an offer that just knocks them out, they will entertain the idea of moving Luis Robert Jr. I mean, that's just the way this game works. When you're not where you're at, you need to make some changes. And I think that's what they're in the process of doing. I mean, I talked with Gene Watson. I talked with a few of the guys who are going to be directly involved in that draft. They're all pretty excited about the number five pick. But, you know, the gold in a draft, if you can get the really strong picks from 10 to 15, those are the guys that many times you get bargains on, and those are the guys that many times come up because they might have to try a little bit harder because they're not highly acclaimed. They're not stars. They're guys who worked to get to where they are, and that work ethic will hold them in good stead as they come into professional baseball.
The weather app tells me sunny and clear, so it agrees with you, Steve Stone, as you look
at... Weather is my long suit, so yeah, If I wasn't doing baseball broadcast and spent my life in baseball, I would probably be a weatherman somewhere.
Wow. See, my problem with the long suit is that I always step on the cuffs. You know what I mean?
That's a problem, yeah. Well, yeah. You know, Sam, the sleeves are too long. I know that one.
Stoney, enjoy today and have a great All-Star break. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Big. Talk to you later.
You got it. It's Steve Stone. Boy, there's some real good stuff in there on pitchers' makeup, on toughness, on aces, and talking to your colleagues and getting some outstanding advice and input. Just tremendous. Terry Crowley.
For Christ's sake, he was released by the Cincinnati Reds.
If you don't know that reference, please Google Earl Weaver and Terry Crowley immediately. It is Matt Spiegler with you on Hit and Run. I told you the phone lines are going to reopen. Now they are. John in Minnesota. Paulie downtown. You're up. You want to hop in and do it now at 312-644-6767. The associate producer will take care of you and earn his $20 here on Hit and Run on the Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
No way. Too high. You said me too high.
Too high.
Not too high. Too hard, right?
First it was really high.
Who gives a f***? It's gone.
On 670 The Score.
Well, you certainly don't want to walk in. That would get the tying run to the plate. You do not want to give up a home run either. It's a very tough pitch coming up for Kyle Hendrick.
Let's see if Kyle can end the frame right here. 3-2 the count. Man at first. Donovan goes. Here's the pitch. A comebacker on one hop right back to Hendricks. He flips to first, out number three. What a night for Kyle Hendricks. Seven scoreless innings. We head to the eighth.
Kyle Hendricks with seven shutout innings on Friday night against the St. Louis Cardinals. Three Ks, gave up five hits, walked one, easily his best start of the year. In 28 games against St. Louis, dude has 2.51 ERA. A 2.51 ERA. Those are 27 starts. He now hasn't allowed a run since July of 2023 against the Cardinals. That's 16 and a third innings over three different starts. You know, and he would tell you that it's a lot of luck. I don't know. So many good hitters over there, blah, blah, blah. But he said this, which I thought was really interesting. I do think there's something to a mound that you go on. You just love throwing from that mound, whether it's your home field or a road stadium. You got a lot of experience in. You're just comfortable on that mound. You've pitched so many times before. Can feel like a place you're experienced at. That was Craig Counsell talking about Kyle Hendricks. And I agree, of course, right? I mean, look, there's certain places where you're just vibing. You're feeling it. I hadn't sung at Space in Evanston for a long time until last night. Sonic 45, we were over there. Me and Len Casper and among many others. That stage is awesome. It sounds good. The rug feels good. The viewpoint is good. The vantage point is good. And our sound man, the great Paul Zerang, same guy who helps the Cubs broadcast, blast through the speakers of your radio dial. Paul Zerang mixed our live sound and was just absolutely awesome. Ziggy Zerang is a tremendous live band sound guy. Just an absolute pleasure. So what I'm saying is, you know, familiarity matters. 670 The Score is where you are. Let's talk about the Cubs. Let's talk about the White Sox with you on Hit and Run. John is in Minnesota, has been patient. We appreciate it. John, good morning. How are you?
Spigs, I'm good. Hey, appreciate you and the Sunday morning baseball talk. I've been a Hit and Run listener all through the years, and I think you're the best man. So, Rosner was good, but he was a little grumpy.
I love his brand of grumpy. That's why when this show was me and Rosner back in the day, you know, his grumpiness was matched with my non-grumpiness. And now that he's gone, I feel like I've gotten a little more grumpy. So maybe it's just waking up on Sundays. Maybe that's what it is.
Gotcha. You know, you mentioned margins before, and I totally agree. And I think, you know, the thing you can't miss on with these margins is a bullpen. And, you know, the Cubs have obviously missed on that. I think, you know, I didn't have a problem with Porter Hodge being in the game yesterday. He's been really good. The problem is Porter Hodge was in the game. And I think when you go back and you look at what Jed did at the start of the year, I mean, he put his eggs in Alzolay's basket. I mean, that guy's injury history tells you he's not going to make it through a season. Same thing, Merriweather was on the IL twice last year. So, and they have not developed guys in their bullpen. I mean, you know, Wisniewski's been in and out. I think he's been a disappointment. You know, Hodge, I'm hoping, you know, he continues. You know, Biggie, obviously you're excited about that. But, you know, man, when the Phillies were in for that series, every guy in their bullpen threw over 97 miles an hour. And I think Boog said it on the air that, you know, their theory is 95 isn't fast enough. And I'd like to see the Cubs working in that direction because, you know, even though they haven't hit, the starting pitching has been wasted because the bullpen's blown 20 saves. Yeah. So, anyway, they've got to be better there. You know, last week was awesome. I think yesterday was more like what the season's been like. So we'll see what happens down the road.
Hey, man, thanks so much for the call, John. You know, it's been brutal. The number of saves that haven't blown, it is 18. The Pirates have blown 17. The Dodgers have blown 16. The Rays have blown 18 saves. And, you know, it doesn't tell you the full story, just the blown saves, because it could be any inning, obviously. What's interesting is overall, in terms of bullpen ERA in all of MLB, the Cubs are down at 17. But since the 1st of June, they're 7th. 7th overall. The bullpen's actually been pretty good. And there's been some different pieces getting it done. Because Adbert's been gone. And obviously Merriweather's been gone. And for a little while, their lighter was gone. Tyson Miller has elevated. you know? So there's been some different pieces. But the bottom line is this. You are 100% right that in the offseason they needed more in the bullpen and they didn't go get it. They have had an arrogance about their own pitch lab and their ability to create people. And it can be effective. It can work. Lighter is a creation with stuff. But look, I'm not going to forget the moment when I asked Carter Hawkins on air, what happened with Jeremiah Estrada? Why did you guys designate him for assignment and now he's in San Diego as their primary setup guy, striking out the world? Because that dude throws in the high 90s and you need it. You're not wrong about the Phillies bullpen. I remember Boog making that point. I will say this. The one dude who's closing games at the end of the Phillies bullpen is the former starter, Jeff Hoffman, guy who came up as a big Rockies prospect as a starting pitcher and now is just dialed in as a reliever and just rearing back and firing. And he's got a 12-6 breaker. I forget whether it's a slider. I think it's a slider that it drops down. And it's just so much more effective than a sweeper. I remember watching that guy in that series being like, oh, God, they need that. I'll give you another interesting name who, as a reliever, is just able to rear back and almost touch a hundo, and that's Caleb Killian. Caleb Killian working out now. It'd be very – if they have Killian and Merriweather in the second half as bullpen options, you'll be looking at two high 90s arms that might – change the complexion of that bullpen. Let's go to Paulie downtown on the scores on Hit and Run. What's up, Paulie? How are you?
Hey, Steve's doing good. Good show. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
You will never outbusiness Mr. Reinsdorf, right? So I'm looking at this from a different perspective. First of all, Sox are going to make $100 million more than the Cubs this year, which is kind of funny. Here's the dynamic, Steve. 2027, the CBA is up, the collective bargaining agreement.
Yeah.
And Reinsdorf is leading the charge again. It's going to be his legacy to break this baseball union, the strongest union in the world. Salaries have got to come down. First of all, the RSNs are bleeding. Marquee is just bleeding money, right? So the TV revenue is coming way down. The players themselves really only account for like 15 to 20% of revenue. They are no longer going to be 50-50 partners with the owners. It's TV revenue, gambling. Gambling is going to be 30, 40% soon of the revenue. The only thing Reinsdorf is mad about with the games being faster, and he said it himself, is that it's cut down on the inter-game wagering. Okay, these big salaries are done. Reinsdorf is laughing at everybody. He's showing you Maldonado, $5 million a year. Ian Happ, $125,000 a game. It's not happening anymore. Okay, so that's why Reinsdorf isn't putting any money into the team until after they see what's happening in 2027.
It's interesting. I wonder if that is a full-on wait. It's also Jerry in his dotage preparing an organization to be sold, because his heirs are going to sell it. So you've got a couple different factors going along there. Nobody wants to hear my baseball labor thoughts. I've got them. I don't think anybody wants to hear it right now. We're at the first half break. We've got the draft today, got the All-Star game. I'll find time to give you some baseball labor thoughts, but it won't be today. Thank you so much for the call, though. Eric is in Old Town on the score. Hello, Eric. Welcome in.
What's going on, Speedy? He's the best baseball show in the city and one of the best baseball people in the land. I love listening to you guys every week.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that.
I was listening to Stoney, and he was talking about, you know, the role of scouts and, you know, when you're looking to play, look for a player, the heart and the cojones, and I totally agree with that. I love that.
Mm.
You know, it's, you know, the advanced scouts is cool, but it shouldn't be the be all end all. And that's, I think that's what frustrates a lot of fans like me. Like, it shouldn't be like the be all end all. It should be, you know, the old school eye test and the scouts. Scouts are very important. And also, you know, player, you know, old school coaches like a Larry Bowl or whatever type of managers. You know, that's a still matter. But the Cubs, I think they should definitely still try to be in the race. I mean, basically, baseball gives you four opportunities to go to the postseason. And we've seen teams that, you know, you look at the Washington Nationals back 5 years ago, and you look at the Atlanta Braves, and, you know, anything can happen in the second half. You know, the bullpen, that's unfortunately, that's going to be a problem. But like Terry Borges used to always say, like, bullpen is great from year to year.
Yeah.
It's a hard thing to figure out. It's just the hitting is, you know, I think, you know, the GMs have done more, in my opinion. You know, the Cubs are in a different level. You're supposed to be in a level with the Yankees and obviously the Dodgers. You're supposed to act like it. You know, you got a top-tier manager.
Hmm.
And he's supposed to act like a top-tier club.
Well, that's a really it's a perceptive point, and it's kind of underpins the entire Cubs experience. And maybe it was most blatantly shown when the Phillies came in. God, I can't really stop thinking about the Phillies for a few different reasons. One is that Dave Dombrowski has the best team in baseball that he's running again. And he had that in Boston when he won a World Series. He had that in Detroit when he won a World Series. Dave Dombrowski has done it a lot of different places. Fired by Hawk Harrelson, White Sox GM Hawk Harrelson. There was a great article earlier this week by Tyler Kepner about Jim Leland and getting into the Hall of Fame. And Jim Leland, for anybody who doesn't remember, was the third base coach under Tony La Russa in those early 80s days with the White Sox. Roland Heeman was the baseball boss, and he had Dave Dombrowski, Tony La Russa, and Jim Leland within the brain trust. And several of those folks were ousted once Jerry Reinsdorf elevated Hawk Harrelson to general manager. La Russa fired, Hall of Famer. Leland sent on his way, Hall of Famer. Dombrowski fired, Hall of Famer. They had an unbelievable brain trust that should have been the template for their next 30 years. And it was not. So anyway, but the other reason I can't stop thinking about the Phillies is that's a big market team who has a great television deal. They got in just under the wire, and that television deal provides them a tremendous amount of money, and it enables John Middleton, their owner, to spend what is admittedly, by his terms and designation, stupid money. Stupid money. To tell Bryce Harper on the field after they clinch the pennant, you're underpaid. And then to go out and spend $300 million on Trey Turner. You know? And to follow Dombrowski's lead and say, no, we need this guy Kyle Schwarber because of who he is as a person and who he is as a player. And they just got so many dudes, man. So many dudes. With a high payroll and a bunch of superstars. And it matters. And then kids coming up with like less weight on their shoulders, like Alec Bohm, and you know, dudes like that. Bryson Stott. And they got more, man. Who's the catcher who's playing while Real Muto is hurt? Is it Marshawn?
Yeah.
Is it Rafael Marshawn?
It is Marshawn.
Okay. So look, if that guy's available once Real Muto comes back, and you have something that you can sell for him, go get him, even if you're still trying to win. And I don't know that the Phillies will give him up, but boy, I like that kid.
OPS in nearly 900.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they just the Phillies are who you want to be. They just are. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. We'll keep taking your phone calls. And we'll do team of the moment. And frankly, this team of the moment, I haven't mentioned them yet on the show, but they've been in my mind several times during the course of the conversation. So your calls and team of the moment next on Hit and Run on 670 The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Keeping Schneider busy. That's carrying back to the track, back to the wall, and it's gone. Now there's a base hit. And it's 8-1 Diamondbacks. They have blown it open into seventh. And for Corbin Carroll, that's his fourth of the year.
Newman is in the on-deck circle. He would hit for Cattell.
Corbin Carroll bidding for one more. Baroa to the track, to the wall, gone. Well, all year long, people have said, hey, where's the power from Corbin Carroll? What happened? Well, he's homer now in consecutive at-bats. Padres knocked in six runs.
It was the team of the moment, offering entertainment. The team of the moment, they caught our eyes.
Corbin Carroll with two home runs, and the Arizona Diamondbacks are the team of the moment. They're 7-3 in their last 10. They've won 10 of their last 14, four in a row. They find themselves one game back of the New York Mets for the third and final wild card spot in the National League. Corbin Carroll was slumping, got it going. Eugenio Suarez had been slumping, he's got it going. The Diamondbacks have not lost a series since June 27th against the Minnesota Twins. And here's what's interesting. At that point, they were looking bad. Things were down. They were going to play the Dodgers and the Padres. And they should have swept both of those teams in California were it not for blown saves by Paul Sewald. Two blown saves kept them from sweeping the Dodgers and the Padres. And a third blown save kept them from taking three out of four from the Braves. But in those 10 games, they went 6-4, felt good about that. And then 7-3 after that. And they're rolling. They are, as I said, just one game out of the wild card. And you know what they did last year, where they made their charge in September, squeezed into the playoffs, and made it all the way to the World Series. And who's to say that they won't do that again? By the way, they have an incredible story in their rotation, a young man named Yilber Diaz, who spent 8 months at the Diamondbacks Academy in the Dominican Republic during the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. They let him stay there. He was unsigned, but he was unable to travel home to Venezuela. And he was allowed to stay there. And you know, it's just an incredible story, because there was a point where he was washing windshields on the streets of Peru and then sat on a bus and then took another bus and then another bus traveling from Peru to Ecuador to Colombia and back to Peru, all trying to get looked at by major league teams. There was an injury mixed in there. Felt he had completely missed the window. But the pandemic then delayed the contract with the Diamondbacks, and eventually he signs, and here he is at 23, and he has now made a couple of starts in a row of going six innings and being really effective for the Diamondbacks. Just an unbelievable story. They've got a great manager, obviously, in Torey Lovello, and a real good mix that we have seen come together before. I will be surprised if the Diamondbacks do not make the playoffs. They are the team of the moment. Could have been the Cubs. Sean and I were talking yesterday. In fact, if the Cubs had won last night, was still going to call them the team of the moment. But you get swept in the doubleheader and you no longer are. Devastation has set in. If Porter Hodge can keep Nolan Arenado from that two-run single, or perhaps if Christopher Morel could shorten up and instead of striking out against Helsley, drive in the tying run that's there at second base. Or if Christopher Morel can shorten up and maybe drive in some of those runs that are sitting there, those ducks that are on the pond in the fourth inning. But that's not why any of you called. Let's go to the phone lines. This is Ron in the South Side on the Score. Hello, Ron. Good morning.
Hey, Speedy. Real quick, I want to make a comment on your discussion last week about baseball and music. Is that okay?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, yeah, well, Buck O'Neill, the former president of the Negro League Baseball Player Museum. Actually, I had a chance to sit down and talk with him. That's another story.
Wow.
But in his book, I was writing on time, he said the two greatest inventions to mankind were jazz and baseball. Now, mm-hmm. My music tastes vary, but jazz pleases me the most. But this is what he said. It was a wonderful relationship between the black baseball players and the jazz museums. And he said the musicians would come to the game during the daytime, and he said they would go to the club. But he really gets into it, the relationships he had. He said the baseball players wanted to be musicians. So I just had to throw that out because Man. It really is a great relationship between the two. So I just had to get that in.
Appreciate that, man. I haven't read Buck's book, and I haven't been to Kansas City, where the Negro Leagues Museum and the Jazz Museum are basically across the parking lot from each other. I got to get there. I will.
Yeah, and you know what? Let me just, I'll wrap this up. I'll talk about Lewis Robb next week. In 1995, Speed, I went for the 75th. They had a big dinner. So I got to the museum. For some reason, I got to the museum about an hour early. So I'm knocking on the door. So Buck O'Neill, he lets me in. And he said, it's not open, but he said, you can come on in and I'll talk baseball with you. And that's what I did. So I'll talk about Lewis Robb next week, but I am glad that he's turning things around. And I think that he will be traded. And I think it'll be a good move. Atlanta Braves Speeds need some outfield help right now.
So. Oh, yeah, they do. Yeah, Robert, they sure do. Without Michael Harris, without Acuna. Jared Kelenic's been playing center. One quick correction, by the way. Thank you to the texters. Dave Dombrowski did not win a World Series in Detroit. They merely went to a couple. He did win a World Series with the Marlins, and he did build the Expos into a great thing that they were from 87 to 91. He helped build them and then went to the Marlins. He was an executive of the year with the Expos, also an executive of the year with the Tigers, also an executive of the year with the Red Sox, and now has the Phillies as the best team in baseball. Other than that, it's been a bad career for the man that Hawk Harrelson fired.
Tough for Dave, man.
Yeah, it's been a tough time. Sorry I didn't win there in Detroit. This is Stan in Bellwood on the score on Hit and Run. Good morning, Stan.
Good morning to you, Steve. Great show as usual.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Hey, Speaks, your team of the moment, the Diamondbacks, I was wrong again. I could have sworn it was going to be the Mets. But nevertheless, it ties into the point that I'm going to make here. I was listening to the call with Stoney. I love Stoney to death, and I respect him and his opinions, but I fell off the couch, when he started to sing Pedro Grifol's praises as a manager. Now, I get that Grifol is stuck with a bad team here, but I don't think that he's any good at all. There are a lot of teams around baseball with managers that, got off to bad starts this year or have done it in the past, but have been able to hold their teams together, make changes, make adjustments, and improve them. Torey Lovullo of the Diamondbacks is a perfect example. I mean, they're a team that everybody penciled in for the playoffs this year, and they were horrible. Corbin Carroll, one of the main reasons. But he held his team together. Same with Alex Cora in Boston, Marmol with the Cardinals. Pedro Grifol has not done one thing in the 2 years that he's been here as manager to improve the White Sox's fortunes. I don't know what his selling point is or what he's good at, handling pitchers, leading. He plays favorites to the detriment of the team. I'm looking at you, Maldonado. I think everybody that sits on the White Sox bench is better at their job than Grifol is at his. And I don't know what Stoney sees in him. I don't get it. I don't think he's good at anything, and I don't think that he's going to resurrect the White Sox fortunes at all. You didn't push back on Stoney.
No, because I don't have time to do that among everything else. I literally, Stan, I don't disagree with a single word you just said. Not a single word. And I didn't push back because I'm not looking to have an argument with Steve Stone about Pedro Grifol when there's a lot.
You don't have to argue, Steve.
Okay, but I also don't. It's my show, baby. I didn't have to. I chose not to address it because I wanted to talk about a million other things with Steve Stone. I completely agree with everything you just said, there are so many opportunities to disagree with people that come up every day in life and on radio. I think Pedro Grifol has been thoroughly exposed. His strength was supposed to be as a leader and as a communicator. And that is not happening. The first thing he was supposed to do was get the most out of the people that have been sucking. That didn't work. Now he's literally only here. He is only here because he's still getting paid. And they don't feel like bothering to pay another guy. That's the only reason he's here. But, you know, I feel like I've made that point. Other people have made that point, and I didn't feel the need to tussle with my guest about it. But I thought your rant was outstanding, so thank you for bringing it. Stan from Bellwood. It's Matt Spiegel here with you on 670 The Score. In an hour, you'll hear from Jed Hoyer. If you missed it on Friday, we pulled the very best, most applicable stuff, and we're going to play it for you at noon as we lead up to Cubs and Cardinals coming your way about 12:40 or so right here on The Score. In the meantime, by the way, we are less than a week away from the Bears reporting for training camp up at Halas Hall. The Score is going to have in-depth coverage of training camp to get you set for the 2024 season. Bears training camp coverage on The Score is presented by Chevy, ChevyDriveChicago.com, and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Let's talk draft, futures game, prospects. Who could the White Sox get for their trades? Who should the Cubs give up in their trades if they do indeed do a little buy? Aram Layton from Just Baseball is great. We'll do him next on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel. Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
I don't think we're going to interrupt that. I think that, it's important for him to feel what 30-32 starts, feel like. Obviously not 6-7 innings, but we'll make those necessary adjustments. But there's something to be said to that. There's something to be said to taking the ball every 5 or 6 days and feeling it, even if you're not going deep in games, even if you're going 2-3 innings. That's important.
That is Pedro Grifol talking about the innings plan for Garrett Crochet. Good morning, everyone. It is Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run on The Score. Always a great opportunity to talk baseball in our unique two-team town on a Sunday morning, and a thrill every time I get a chance to bring in Steve Stone, the Score's baseball expert, who joins us right now on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Hello, Mr. Stone. How are you?
Good, Spiegs. How are you?
I'm good. Happy birthday. Is that true?
Well, thank you. Yeah, it really is. I guess as long as I continue having them, all will be well. So, although I'd like to have had a few less, I continue to really enjoy my birthday.
Well, good. And you're working. You're working,
yes,
not only with us, but later today. That's, why not, I suppose, after a certain point.
Well, I'm at the park right now looking in. It looks like the end of the world. There's lightning and thunder everywhere, but a lot like life. Sometimes it gets off to a rough start, but it's going to be a beautiful day today. This is all going to clear out. It's going to be sunny. It's going
to
be great.
Oh, man, your mouth to God's ears. Steve, we played Paul Skeens and Garrett Crochet.
I heard him.
Wasn't that cool? I love that.
Yeah. It's great because they're two young stars in this game. They both throw very hard, obviously, but one lefty, one a righty. One's been around a bit. The other is a rookie, but they're both outstanding pitchers. I mean, I would have loved and would love to see that they would start head-to-head, but that's probably not going to happen. I don't know, but for Paul Skeens, it's really an honor to start that game. I was able to start one. I knew that there wasn't going to be any more because my arm wasn't feeling all that great at that point, but just that one time is absolutely a thrill. I hope his folks can go out and see that. Same thing with Garrett's family. They can go out and see that game because I had my parents
at the game in 1980, and it was a thrill for them. It was a thrill for me.
Wow, that's really cool that your folks got there. And, you know, I mean, the Baseball All-Star Game, which Stoney starred in and was the MVP after three perfect innings, right?
Yes, I didn't win the MVP because Griffey decided he was going to hit a home run off Tommy John, and they wound up winning the game.
Yet,
I heard it hadn't been done for 14 years or something like that. Three perfect innings, and then it's never been done since, and won't be done again because nobody in their right mind is going to let their starting pitcher go three innings to start the game of the All-Star game.
Yeah.
So they'll go an inning, and that'll be great, though.
Yeah, 250 innings for Steve Stone that year, so perhaps he knew that the arm was not going to allow much more of it. Let me ask you, though, do you remember a moment like Skeens and Crochet just had where a great contemporary of yours was complimentary of you, and it mattered? Because, that can matter a great deal. I remember being a young talk show host and somebody saying, you know what, you're good at this, and you got a shot to be really good at this. It was like, wow, okay. And sometimes those moments matter. So do you remember a great contemporary of yours being complimentary of you, and it meant something to you?
Well, I remember a guy, and you might not recognize the name because at the time he was a bench player for the Orioles and later went on to become a hitting coach. His name was Terry Crowley. And after one particular antagonizing moment with Earl Weaver, I was in the shower and I hear somebody in Spikes come in. It's Terry Crowley. He says, grab a towel and come sit over here. Because I'd started three or four games for the Orioles at that point. I was new to the team. And he said, look, let me tell you a little something. He says, I know it's not going as well as you'd like right now, but understand something. As long as you're wearing that uniform, he said, we are a team of professional winners, and you wouldn't be a winner. You wouldn't be here if you weren't a winner. He said, our super scout, Jimmy Russo, watches everybody really carefully before they're brought to this team. And if you keep us close, you will win more games here in Baltimore than you ever dreamt you could win before. He said, we don't score early and we don't score often. And he said, but if you hold us close, you're going to win. He said, this is a team that will sit around and wait for that other team to make a mistake. And when they do, we're going to bury them with it. And that's exactly what happened. We won 202 games in 2 years. That was a team of professional winners. They had their own way of welcoming various players to that particular team. And it was that conversation, another one I had with Mark Belanger after we gave up 47 runs in three games to Milwaukee. And I'm just shaking my head. I didn't pitch in it. And he says, what's going on here? I said, what's going on? 47 runs in three games. He goes, you're worried about that? I said, didn't look too good. He says, let me tell you something. We come back twice. Come back the end of June. We come back beginning of September. He said, starting June 1st, nobody hits our pitching. He said, nobody.
Ha!
He said, when we come back here, we're going to kill them because we're going to hit their pitching and they're not going to hit ours. And as long as you're wearing that Baltimore uniform, that's the way it's going to be. So you had guys on that team that told the newcomers to the team exactly what they were getting into, what they expected of you, what they wanted you to do. And that's how a team gets to be a championship caliber baseball team, is getting a few guys who understand that you're going to be better than another team on a daily and nightly basis.
Man.
The object, when you don't have a winning tradition, and the Sox don't have one of those specifically, but the object of that is to grow that attitude. You make a team that the whole is better than the sum of its parts. We didn't have the best players in the American League. We just happened to win it.
So Stoney, I feel like from what I've heard, Garrett Crochet has some of those personal characteristics that can make a great pitcher a real ace, and can make an ace somebody like that, who, like you're describing, who can helm a rotation. You know, like Drew Thorpe is good and I like him. Noah Schultz is probably coming. You've got Cannon, you've got Moore, Eater, you know, getting a little taste of it. Jake Eater, you know, getting a taste of it. But does Garrett Crochet seem to have those characteristics you're describing in terms of a pitcher? And if so, how valuable is that when you're deciding whether to keep or trade?
Well, first of all, you want five guys like Garrett Crochet, but you can't get them because he's unique. He's a guy that nobody hits. I don't think they see the ball until it's right up on him. By that point, it's too late. But he's been a wonderful
a wonderful member of this ball club, and he's got the right attitude. He is a bulldog on the mound. He's a guy that gives you everything he's got each and every time out. Nothing seems to affect him very much. And, yeah, that's he's got those characteristics. Now you have to grow a few more. And by doing that, you just have to bring in guys that understand how to play baseball. It's not enough just to know how to hit. It's not enough just to know how to run. It's not enough to know how to occasionally hit the ball out of the ballpark. You have to have guys that understand how to play the game of baseball and then how to play winning baseball. And sometimes they're not one and the same. But if you prepare your team to win the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning on a daily basis, you're probably going to win a good portion of your games. And it's these philosophies that I think the new administration here, and I really like what Chris Getz has done with the front office. I like the guys he's brought in. There's a changeover in personnel, and it seems to me these guys have a pretty good idea about what's going on. I mean, just the signing of Eric Fetty was a wonderful sign, and we'll see what happens. I think he's pretty desirable, and as we know, the trade deadline is coming up. Today is the draft. There's a chance to get a whole lot better. The Sox have five. They have the fifth pick, and so there's a lot of guys working a lot of long hours to try to put this thing together. And I think despite the looks of this year, because this was basically an inherited team. And, you know, I know that Pedro is not one of those guys that the fandom gets warm and fuzzy with, but he hasn't had much of a team for 2 years. Hopefully he'll get a chance to do that with more talent. And then you'll be able to see the measure of the man and the measure of the manager. But I'm not sure it's fair to evaluate him on what he's been handed for a year and a year and a half plus, because there's just not a whole lot of talent here, major league-wise. I mean, they're wonderfully talented people, but I'm talking about comparatively in the major leagues.
We're going to talk to Aram Layton from Just Baseball at the top of the 11 o'clock hour. I want to ask him about some of the stuff from the Futures game. I haven't had a chance to see Noah Schultz in person yet, or even really an extended video. I'm excited about him. What do you think of him as a prospect, Stoney?
Well, I think anytime you get a guy who's 6'9", who throws like he does, you have to view it that he's a pretty good prospect. You know, you got to see him for a while. You don't know what's going to happen. Nobody can stage development. In other words, you take a look at a guy and you get a great scout and he tells you, this guy will develop in a year. This guy will develop in a year and a half. This guy will develop in 2 years. You don't really know. That's a non-exact science. But if you have great talent to work with, then the second thing you have to have, which I believe is the most important, and by the way, you cannot find in a computer, tell me the size of the guy's heart and the size of the guy's huevos. If you can tell me that, you got yourself somebody, and he can answer the question that this is the right guy, then you have yourself a guy. That's why scouts are important. I don't poo-poo computers because I think that there's a lot of great things that come out of them. But the realization is 90% of the things that everybody spits into their computer, all 30 teams in the major leagues, 90% is the same. You have to believe that the 10% you have that's proprietary, that it's much better than everybody else. Sometimes it doesn't work that way. But the true scout can tell you what's inside a guy. A computer can't.
Steve Stone with us here on 670 The Score. Stoney, Drew Thorpe was on Inside the Clubhouse yesterday with Bruce Levine and David Haugh. He was asked how he's been successful.
I think just, you know, sticking to the game plans each week and, you know, working with the catchers, dialing it in with pitch shapes and stuff, and just, you know, continuing to mix around and keep hitters off balance.
So four straight quality starts for that guy. I heard somebody talk about him as being tough and like brave. They said he's got cojones of steel. What do you think of Drew Thorpe and what does pitcher toughness look like? You know what I mean? I'm trying to wrap my head around that idea of a pitcher being tough in that kind of way.
Okay, so let's take one example, and it's Eric Fetty. Eric Fetty goes out there, loads the bases in the first inning with nobody out. He's telling himself at that point, they're not going to get me. I'm going to get them. You always feel that you're better than whoever it is you're playing against. And I'm realistic. I mean, I didn't have all-world talent. And you face all of these guys on a daily basis, some of them are going to the Hall of Fame. Some of these guys have more talent than you have, but you have to beat them on a given day. I think that's the philosophy that Drew Thorpe has. I do believe he goes out there with a unique pitch. That straight change is just absolutely outstanding. And he believes that nobody's going to hit it. And if they do, well, it was a mistake. And then I'll throw something else. I mean, he broke out the cutter last time, which looked pretty good. But his ability to stay around the plate with everything is probably his greatest attribute, that and a wonderful straight change. And if you have a good straight change, you're usually going to be in pretty good shape. Now, he knows he doesn't have the big fastball, but his fastball has perceived velocity, because when you're looking at the straight change quite a bit, all of a sudden you see a fastball up in your eyes that's 91, maybe 92 if the wind's behind him, then all of a sudden that fastball looks a whole lot faster. And I think that's what Drew has. Coming in and doing what he's done, it's really a remarkable thing. It shows you also a pretty good trade was made for Dylan Cease, because Thorpe was one of the guys coming back. There's a few others that are pretty good also.
Yeah, it's fun to watch him, and it's exciting to think about. I always have a soft spot for the dudes who are really changing speeds with a big repertoire and using what you just called the perceived velocity. It's like it just feels like it's. I mean, Kyle Hendricks was great the other night for the Cubs against the Cardinals. Now that he has reincorporated the curveball, and I don't know if it's as much about the shape of the curve as it is as much as it is that speed and that pace, it just throws off people's timings. It makes everything else work better, doesn't it, when you can mix it up like that?
If you can throw a great straight change, you're going to probably find a place in the major leagues, assuming your other stuff is commensurate with what you have. But the great straight change is really difficult to hit. And he came in not afraid to throw it, not afraid to throw it a lot. I'm not sure he's afraid of much of anything on the mound. So we're slowly putting together a really good starting rotation. You have to shore up the bullpen. Everybody knows that as far as baseball is concerned. Because without a good bullpen these days, you're going to finish up the track. You don't have pitchers going, you know, averaging seven innings plus. That doesn't work that way anymore. And your bullpen, especially the back end, has got to be as close to unhittable as you can get it, which is why having Liam Hendricks here in the years that the Sox had him, there was a sense of comfort when you got the lead late in the game, because here comes Liam running in from the bullpen, and you just know they're not going to hit him. And he also knows something else. He wasn't going to walk anybody to start an inning. That's death for a short reliever especially, and that happens a little bit too much.
So Luis Robert has 11 hits, an OPS of almost 800 here in the month of July. Bob Nightingale this morning writing in USA Today, Stoney, that the White Sox are, quote, cautiously optimistic that they can trade him, unquote. Do you think we're watching the last couple of weeks of Luis Robert on the White Sox?
I don't really know. I can't answer for Chris Getz. I do know that Luis is a guy who has tremendous value. And I think when your team is doing what the Sox have done last year and are doing this year, there shouldn't be any untouchables. Now, it would take a bundle to get a couple of these guys. Garrett Crochet, to me, is a guy you build around, not the guy you move. Luis Robert, if you move him, you're going to get a big haul in return. I don't think necessarily that's a bad thing. So they don't want to move Luis Robert, but if somebody comes to them with an offer that just knocks them out, they will entertain the idea of moving Luis Robert Jr. I mean, that's just the way this game works. When you're not where you're at, you need to make some changes. And I think that's what they're in the process of doing. I mean, I talked with Gene Watson. I talked with a few of the guys who are going to be directly involved in that draft. They're all pretty excited about the number five pick. But, you know, the gold in a draft, if you can get the really strong picks from 10 to 15, those are the guys that many times you get bargains on, and those are the guys that many times come up because they might have to try a little bit harder because they're not highly acclaimed. They're not stars. They're guys who worked to get to where they are, and that work ethic will hold them in good stead as they come into professional baseball.
The weather app tells me sunny and clear, so it agrees with you, Steve Stone, as you look
at... Weather is my long suit, so yeah, if I wasn't doing baseball broadcast and spent my life in baseball,
I would probably be a weatherman somewhere.
Wow. See, my problem with the long suit is that I always step on the cuffs. You know what I mean?
That's a problem, yeah. Well, yeah. You know, Sam, the sleeves are too long. I know that one.
Stoney, enjoy today and have a great All-Star break. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Big. Talk to you later.
You got it. It's Steve Stone. Boy, there's some real good stuff in there on pitchers' makeup, on toughness, on aces, and talking to your colleagues and getting some outstanding advice and input. Just tremendous. Terry Crowley.
For Christ's sake, he was released by the Cincinnati Reds.
If you don't know that reference, please Google Earl Weaver and Terry Crowley immediately. It is Matt Spiegler with you on Hit and Run. I told you the phone lines are going to reopen. Now they are. John in Minnesota. Paulie downtown. You're up. You want to hop in, do it now at 312-644-6767. The associate producer will take care of you and earn his $20 here on Hit and Run on the Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
No way. Too high. Too high? You said me too high.
Too high.
Not too high.
First,
right?
It was really high.
Who gives a? It's gone.
On 670, the Score.
Well, you certainly don't want to walk in. That would get the tying run to the plate. You do not want to give up a home run either. It's a very tough pitch coming up for Kyle Hendrick.
Let's see if Kyle can end the frame right here. 3-2 the count. Man at first. Donovan goes. Here's the pitch. A comebacker on one hop right back to Hendricks. He flips to first, out number three. What a night for Kyle Hendricks. 7 scoreless innings. We head to the 8th.
Kyle Hendricks with 7 shutout innings on Friday night against the St. Louis Cardinals. 3 Ks, gave up 5 hits, walked 1. Easily his best start of the year. In 28 games against St. Louis, dude has 2.51 ERA. A 2.51 ERA. Those are 27 starts. He now hasn't allowed a run since July of 2023 against the Cardinals. That's 16 1/3 innings over 3 different starts. You know, and he would tell you that it's a lot of luck. I don't know. So many good hitters over there, blah, blah, blah. But he said this, which I thought was really interesting. I do think there's something to a mound that you go on. You just love throwing from that mound, whether it's your home field or a Rhodes Stadium. You got a lot of experience in. You're just comfortable on that mound. You've pitched so many times before. Can feel like a place you're experienced at. That was Craig Counsell talking about Kyle Hendricks. And I agree, of course, right? I mean, look, there's certain places where you're just vibing. You're feeling it. I hadn't sung at Space in Evanston for a long time until last night. Sonic 45, we were over there. Me and Len Casper, and among many others. That stage is awesome. It sounds good. The rug feels good. The viewpoint is good. The vantage point is good. And our sound man, the great Paul Zerang, same guy who helps the Cubs broadcast blast through the speakers of your radio dial. Paul Zerang mixed our live sound and was just absolutely awesome. Ziggy Zerang is a tremendous live band sound guy. Just an absolute pleasure. So what I'm saying is, you know, familiarity matters. 670 the Score is where you are. Let's talk about the Cubs. Let's talk about the White Sox with you on Hit and Run. John is in Minnesota, has been patient. We appreciate it, John. Good morning. How are you?
Spigs, I'm good. Hey, appreciate you and the Sunday morning baseball talk. I've been a Hit and Run listener all through the years, and I think you're the best man. So, Rosner was good, but he was a little grumpy.
I love his brand of grumpy. That's why when this show was me and Rosner back in the day, you know, his grumpiness was matched with my non-grumpiness. And now that he's gone, I feel like I've gotten a little more grumpy. So maybe it's just waking up on Sundays. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, gotcha. You know, you mentioned margins before, and I totally agree. And I think, you know, the thing you can't miss on with these margins is a bullpen. And, you know, the Cubs have obviously missed on that. I think, you know, I didn't have a problem with Porter Hodge being in the game yesterday. He's been really good. The problem is Porter Hodge was in the game. And I think when you go back and you look at what Jed did at the start of the year, I mean, he put his eggs in Alzolay's basket. I mean, that guy's injury history tells you he's not going to make it through a season. Same thing, Merriweather was on the IL twice last year. So, and they have not developed guys in their bullpen. I mean, you know, Wisniewski's been in and out. I think he's been a disappointment. You know, Hodge, I'm hoping, you know, he continues. You know, Biggie, obviously you're excited about that. But, you know, man, when the Phillies were in for that series, every guy in their bullpen threw over 97 miles an hour. And I think Boog said it on the air that, you know, their theory is 95 isn't fast enough. And I'd like to see the Cubs working in that direction because, you know, if you know, even though they haven't hit, the starting pitching has been wasted because the bullpen's blown 20 saves. Yeah. So, anyway, they've got to be better there. You know, last week was awesome. I think yesterday was more like what the season's been like. So we'll see what happens down the road.
Hey, man, thanks so much for the call, John. You know, it's been brutal. The number of saves that haven't blown, it is 18. The Pirates have blown 17. The Dodgers have blown 16. The Rays have blown 18 saves. And, you know, it doesn't tell you the full story, just the blown saves, because it could be any inning, obviously. What's interesting is overall, in terms of bullpen ERA in all of MLB, the Cubs are down at 17. But since the 1st of June, they're 7th. 7th overall. The bullpen's actually been pretty good, and there's been some different pieces getting it done because Adbert's been gone, and obviously Merriweather's been gone. And for a little while, their lighter was gone. Tyson Miller has elevated, you know? So there's been some different pieces. But the bottom line is this. You are 100% right that in the offseason, they needed more in the bullpen and they didn't go get it. They have had an arrogance about their own pitch lab and their ability to create people, and it can be effective. It can work. Lighter is a creation with stuff. But look, I'm not going to forget the moment when I asked Carter Hawkins on air, what happened with Jeremiah Estrada? Why did you guys designate him for assignment, and now he's in San Diego as their primary setup guy, striking out the world? Because that dude throws in the high 90s, and you need it. You're not wrong about the Phillies bullpen. I remember Boog making that point. I will say this. The one dude who's closing games at the end of the Phillies bullpen is the former starter, Jeff Hoffman, guy who came up as a big Rockies prospect as a starting pitcher, and now is just dialed in as a reliever and just rearing back and firing. And he's got a 12-6 breaker. I forget whether it's a slider. I think it's a slider that it drops down. And it's just so much more effective than a sweeper. I remember watching that guy in that series being like, oh, God, they need that. I'll give you another interesting name who, as a reliever, is just able to rear back and almost touch a hundo, and that's Caleb Killian. Caleb Killian working out now. If they have Killian and Merriweather in the second half as bullpen options, you'll be looking at two high 90s arms that might change the complexion of that bullpen. Let's go to Paulie downtown on the Score, who's on Hit and Run. What's up, Paulie? How are you?
Hey, Steve's doing good. Good show. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
You will never out-business Mr. Reinsdorf, right? So I'm looking at this from a different perspective. First of all, Sox are going to make $100 million more than the Cubs this year, which is kind of funny. here's the dynamic, Steve. 2027, the CBA is up, the collective bargaining agreement.
Yeah.
And Reinsdorf is leading the charge again. It's going to be his legacy to break this baseball union, the strongest union in the world. Salaries have got to come down. First of all, the RSNs are bleeding. Marquee is just bleeding money, right? So the TV revenue is coming way down. The players themselves really only account for like 15 to 20% of revenue. They are no longer going to be 50-50 partners with the owners. It's TV revenue, gambling. Gambling is going to be 30, 40% soon of the revenue. The only thing Reinsdorf is mad about with the games being faster, and he said it himself, is that it's cut down on the inter-game wagering. Okay, these big salaries are done. Reinsdorf is laughing at everybody. He's showing you Maldonado, $5 million a year. Ian Happ, $125,000 a game. It's not happening anymore. Okay, so that's why Reinsdorf isn't putting any money into the team until after they see what's happening in 2027.
It's interesting. I wonder if that is a full-on wait. It's also Jerry in his dotage preparing an organization to be sold, because his heirs are going to sell it. So you've got a couple different factors going along there. Nobody wants to hear my baseball labor thoughts. I've got them. I don't think anybody wants to hear it right now. We're at the first half break. We've got the draft today. Got the All-Star game. I'll find time to give you some baseball labor thoughts, but it won't be today. Thank you so much for the call, though. Eric is in Old Town on the score. Hello, Eric. Welcome in.
What's going on, Speedy? He's the best baseball show in the city and one of the best baseball people in the land. I love listening to you guys every week.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that.
I was listening to Stoney, and he was talking about, you know, the role of scouts and, you know, when you're looking to play, look for a player, the heart and the cojones, and I totally agree with that. I love that. You know, it's, you know, the advanced scouts is cool, but it shouldn't be the be all end all. And that's, I think that's what frustrates a lot of fans like me. Like, it shouldn't be like the be all end all. It should be, you know, the old school eye test and the scouts. Scouts are very important. And also, you know, player, you know, old school coaches like a Larry Bowe or whatever type of managers. You know, that's a still matter. But the Cubs, I think they should definitely still try to be in the race. I mean, basically baseball gives you four opportunities to go to the postseason. And we've seen teams that, you know, you look at the Washington Nationals back 5 years ago, and you look at the Atlanta Braves, and, you know, anything can happen in the second half. You know, the bullpen, that's unfortunately, that's going to be a problem. But like Terry Borges always say, like, bullpens from year to year.
Yeah.
It's a hard thing to figure out. It's just the hitting is, you know, I think, you know, the GMs have done more, in my opinion. You know, the Cubs are in a different level. You're supposed to be in a level with the Yankees and obviously the Dodgers. You're supposed to act like it. You know, you got a top-tier manager. And he's supposed to act like a top-tier club.
Well, that's a really it's a perceptive point, and it's kind of underpins the entire Cubs experience. And maybe it was most blatantly shown when the Phillies came in. God, I can't really stop thinking about the Phillies for a few different reasons. One is that Dave Dombrowski has the best team in baseball that he's running again. And he had that in Boston when he won a World Series. He had that in Detroit when he won a World Series. Dave Dombrowski has done it a lot of different places. Fired by Hawk Harrelson, White Sox GM Hawk Harrelson. There was a great article earlier this week by Tyler Kepner about Jim Leland and getting into the Hall of Fame. And Jim Leland, for anybody who doesn't remember, was the third base coach under Tony La Russa in those early 80s days with the White Sox. Roland Heeman was the baseball boss, and he had Dave Dombrowski, Tony La Russa, and Jim Leland within the brain trust. And several of those folks were ousted once Jerry Reinsdorf elevated Hawk Harrelson to general manager. La Russa fired, Hall of Famer. Leland sent on his way, Hall of Famer. Dombrowski fired, Hall of Famer. They had an unbelievable brain trust that should have been the template for their next 30 years. And it was not. So anyway, but the other reason I can't stop thinking about the Phillies is that's a big market team who has a great television deal. They got in just under the wire, and that television deal provides them a tremendous amount of money, and it enables John Middleton, their owner, to spend what is admittedly, by his terms and designation, stupid money. Stupid money. To tell Bryce Harper on the field after they clinched the pennant, you're underpaid. And then to go out and spend $300 million on Trey Turner. You know? And to follow Dombrowski's lead and say, no, we need this guy Kyle Schwarber because of who he is as a person and who he is as a player. And they just got so many dudes, man. So many dudes with a high payroll and a bunch of superstars. And it matters. And then kids coming up with like less weight on their shoulders, like Alec Bohm and, you know, dudes like that. Bryson Stott. And they got more, man. Who's the catcher who's playing while Real Muto is hurt? Is it Marshawn?
Yeah.
Is it Rafael Marchand?
It is Marchand.
Okay. So look, if that guy's available once Real Muto comes back and you have something that you can sell for him, go get him, even if you're still trying to win. And I don't know that the Phillies will give him up, but boy, I like that kid.
OPS in nearly 900.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they just the Phillies are who you want to be. They just are. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. We'll keep taking your phone calls. And we'll do Team of the Moment. And frankly, this Team of the Moment, I haven't mentioned them yet on the show, but they've been in my mind several times during the course of the conversation. So your calls and Team of the Moment next on Hit and Run on 670 The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Keeping Schneider busy. That's carrying back to the track, back to the wall, and it's gone. Now there's a base hit, and it's 8-1 Diamondbacks. They have blown it open into seventh. And for Corbin Carroll, that's his fourth of the year.
Newman is in the on-deck circle. He would hit for Cattell. Corbin Carroll bidding for one more. Baroa to the track, to the wall, gone.
Oh, all year long, people have said, hey, the power from Corbin Carroll. What happened? Well, he's homer now in consecutive at bats. He's knocked in six runs.
It was the team of the moment, offering entertainment. The team of the moment, they caught our eyes.
Corbin Carroll with two home runs, and the Arizona Diamondbacks are the team of the moment. They're 7-3 in their last 10. They've won 10 of their last 14, four in a row. They find themselves one game back of the New York Mets for the third and final wild card spot in the National League. Corbin Carroll was slumping, got it going. Eugenio Suarez had been slumping, he's got it going. The Diamondbacks have not lost a series since June 27th against the Minnesota Twins. And here's what's interesting. At that point, they were looking bad. Things were down. They were going to play the Dodgers and the Padres. And they should have swept both of those teams in California, were it not for blown saves by Paul Sewald. Two blown saves kept them from sweeping the Dodgers and the Padres. And a third blown save kept them from taking three out of four from the Braves. But in those 10 games, they went 6-4, felt good about that. And then 7-3 after that. And they're rolling. They are, as I said, just one game out of the wild card. And you know what they did last year, where they made their charge in September, squeezed into the playoffs, and made it all the way to the World Series. And who's to say that they won't do that again? By the way, they have an incredible story in their rotation, a young man named Yilber Diaz, who spent 8 months at the Diamondbacks Academy in the Dominican Republic during the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. They let him stay there. He was unsigned, but he was unable to travel home to Venezuela. And he was allowed to stay there. And you know, it's just an incredible story, because there was a point where he was washing windshields on the streets of Peru and then sat on a bus and then took another bus and then another bus traveling from Peru to Ecuador to Colombia and back to Peru, all trying to get looked at by major league teams. There was an injury mixed in there, felt he had completely missed the window. But the pandemic then delayed the contract with the Diamondbacks, and eventually he signs, and here he is at 23, and he has now made a couple of starts in a row of going six innings and being really effective for the Diamondbacks. Just an unbelievable story. They've got a great manager, obviously, in Torey Lovullo, and a real good mix that we have seen come together before. I will be surprised if the Diamondbacks do not make the playoffs. They are the team of the moment. Could have been the Cubs. Sean and I were talking yesterday. In fact, if the Cubs had won last night, was still going to call them the team of the moment. But you get swept in the doubleheader and you no longer are. Devastation has set in. If Porter Hodge can keep Nolan Arenado from that two-run single, or perhaps if Christopher Morel could shorten up and instead of striking out against Helsley, drive in the tying run that's there at second base, or if Christopher Morel can shorten up and maybe drive in some of those runs that are sitting there, those ducks that are on the pond in the fourth inning. But that's not why any of you called. Let's go to the phone lines. This is Ron in the South Side on the Score. Hello, Ron. Good morning.
Hey, Speed. Real quick, I want to make a comment on your discussion last week about baseball and music. Is that okay?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Buck O'Neill, the former president of the Negro League Baseball Player Museum. Actually, I had a chance to sit down and talk with him. That's another story.
Wow.
But in his book, I was writing on time. He said the two greatest inventions to mankind with jazz and baseball. Now, Me, my music tastes vary, but jazz pleases me the most. But this is what he said. It was a wonderful relationship between the black baseball players and the jazz museums. And he said the musicians would come to the game during the daytime, and he said they would go to the club. But he really gets into it, the relationships. Yeah, he said the baseball players wanted to be musicians. So I just had to throw that out because It really is a great relationship between the two. So I just had to get that in.
Appreciate that, man. I haven't read Buck's book, and I haven't been to Kansas City, where the Negro Leagues Museum and the Jazz Museum are basically across the parking lot from each other. I got to get there. I will.
Yeah, and you know what? Let me I'll wrap this up. I'll talk about Lewis Robb next week. In 1995, Speed, I went for the 75th. They had a big dinner. So I got to the museum. For some reason, I got to the museum about an hour early. So I'm knocking on the door. So Buck O'Neill, he lets me in. And he said, it's not open, but he said, you can come on in and I'll talk baseball with you. And that's what I did. So I'll talk about Luis Robb next week, but I am glad that he's turning things around. And I think that he will be traded. And I think it'll be a good move. Atlanta Braves Speeds need some outfield help right now.
Oh, yeah, they do. Yeah, Robert, they sure do. Without Michael Harris, without Acuna. Jared Kelenic's been playing center. One quick correction, by the way. Thank you to the texters. Dave Dombrowski did not win a World Series in Detroit. They merely went to a couple. He did win a World Series with the Marlins. And he did build the Expos into a great thing that they were from 87 to 91. He helped build them and then went to the Marlins. He was an executive of the year with the Expos, also an executive of the year with the Tigers, also an executive of the year with the Red Sox, and now has the Phillies as the best team in baseball. Other than that, it's been a bad career for the man that Hawk Harrelson fired.
Tough for Dave, man.
Yeah, been a tough time. Sorry I didn't win there in Detroit. This is Stan in Bellwood on the Score on Hit and Run. Good morning, Stan.
Good morning to you, Steve. Great show as usual.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Hey, Speaks, your team of the moment, the Diamondbacks, I was wrong again. I could have sworn it was going to be the Mets. But nevertheless, it ties into the point that I'm going to make here. I was listening to the call with Stoney. I love Stoney to death, and I respect him and his opinions, but I fell off the couch, when he started to sing Pedro Grifol's praises as a manager. Now, I get that Grifol is stuck with a bad team here, but I don't think that he's any good at all. There are a lot of teams around baseball with managers that, got off to bad starts this year or have done it in the past, but have been able to hold their teams together, make changes, make adjustments and improve them. Torey Lovullo of the Diamondbacks is a perfect example. I mean, they're a team that everybody penciled in for the playoffs this year, and they were horrible. Corbin Carroll, one of the main reasons. But he held his team together. Same with Alex Cora in Boston, Marmol with the Cardinals. Pedro Grifol has not done one thing in the 2 years that he's been here as manager to improve the White Sox's fortunes. I don't know what his selling point is or what he's good at, handling pitchers, leading. You know, he plays favorites to the detriment of the team. I'm looking at you, Maldonado. I think everybody that sits on the White Sox bench is better at their job than Grifol is at his. And I don't know what Stoney sees in him. I don't get it. I don't think he's good at anything, and I don't think that he's going to resurrect the White Sox fortunes at all. You didn't push back on
because I don't have time to do that among everything else. I literally, Stan, I don't disagree with a single word you just said. Not a single word. And I didn't push back because I'm not looking to have an argument with Steve Stone about Pedro Grifol when there's a lot.
You don't have to argue, Steve.
Okay, but I also don't. It's my show, baby. I didn't have to. I chose not to address it because I wanted to talk about a million other things with Steve Stone. I completely agree with everything you just said. There are so many opportunities to disagree with people that come up every day in life and on radio. I think Pedro Grifol has been thoroughly exposed. His strength was supposed to be as a leader and as a communicator. And that is not happening. The first thing he was supposed to do was get the most out of the people that have been sucking. That didn't work. Now he's literally only here. He is only here because he's still getting paid. And they don't feel like bothering to pay another guy. That's the only reason he's here. But, you know, I feel like I've made that point. Other people have made that point, and I didn't feel the need to tussle with my guest about it. But I thought your rant was outstanding, so thank you for bringing it. Stan from Bellwood. It's Matt Spiegel here with you on 670 The Score. In an hour, you'll hear from Jed Hoyer. If you missed it on Friday, we pulled the very best, most applicable stuff, and we're going to play it for you at noon as we lead up to Cubs and Cardinals coming your way about 12:40 or so right here on The Score. In the meantime, by the way, we are less than a week away from the Bears reporting for training camp up at Halas Hall. The Score is going to have in-depth coverage of training camp to get you set for the 2024 season. Bears training camp coverage on The Score is presented by Chevy, ChevyDriveChicago.com, and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Let's talk draft, futures game, prospects. Who could the White Sox get for their trades? Who should the Cubs give up in their trades if they do indeed do a little buy? Arm Layton from Just Baseball is great. We'll do him next on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.